Shalom Layehudim, Shalom Labnei Noach, Shalom Goyim. It's the evening of the second day, Tesvav Be'iyal, Parashas Behuchosai, Tavshin Ayin Vav, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 22 May 2016, webcasting from the homeland of the ever-squabbling Jews. Well, the musical chairs of this government, they all seem to play this game at some point, continues. On Friday morning, Defense Minister Moshe Bogi Yaalon resigned, and at noon held a press conference. And never mind, no press conference is ever really a conference. It's just a politician player speaking to journalists who ask questions. That's no conference. Anyway, Bogi said, quote, "I found myself in a difficult political arguments with the prime minister over values, fighting the racism that has permeated throughout the IDF and damaged it," close quote. The what? The racism? Israelis never cease flinging this word at others without ever understanding it. The word used in Hebrew is gizanut, which is not a good translation. What likely he had in mind was the defense by the Vox Populi, the people of Israel, for Elor Azariah after Bogi called to invite him for murder, I think, then manslaughter. What made for bad blood was Netanyahu's initial backing for Yaalon, but then he made a U-turn after he heard the outcry of the people. I think that is the chronology, and if so, Yaalon is right to be bitter. And in retrospect, he was right to indict, leastwise, if it's true, as I recently heard, that Elor shot that prone would-be murderer 11 minutes after he was dropped, which changes the picture considerably. For sure, the scene of the incident was the usual high-tension hubbub with soldiers and police on the scene and an ambulance and onlookers, and if indeed Elor killed him 11 minutes into this episode, did he have the authority to do that? Did he have superior officers nearby? In other words, Bogi was right to initiate an investigation. Bibi backed him at first, but then flip-flopped. On the other hand, Bogi's bitterness at this turn of events is understandable, but his response is typical of leftists with their brain-dead name-calling. He's embittered by the support inside the army for Elor Azariah, it seems, and he fires back with racism. There's no racism here. The original sin and sinner in this story, I think, as I said in a recent webcast, was the as-yet unnamed soldier who fired the shot that dropped the Arab killer before he could strike again, who did not finish him off. In a word, this episode is, like so many, not so clear-cut, and one in which everyone seems to have done something wrong. On Friday night on TV, for the post-Jewish Israelis who ignore the Fourth Commandment, Ehud Barak opined in an interview that the current government coalition led by Netanyahu is, quote, exhibiting signs of fascism. Extremist elements have taken over the state of Israel, close quote. And I find this just intolerable on several levels. It's, first of all, the remark of another poorly educated Israeli who does not know what fascism is. It's another word I like to throw around. Like Yair Golan, his comrade in arms, a fellow career soldier in the IDF, which was the creation of post-Jewish leftists in the communes. This is Barak, or that was Golan, rather, popping off about early 20th century German history without any indication he knew what he was talking about. He referenced, quote, political processes in Germany at that time and insinuated they exist in Israel and are growing. And I think it is most significant that one political process in that period, he did not single out the process of antisemitismus and the mass hysteria about Jews and the evil they allegedly commit. Like the Sherlock Holmes story, where the most important clue is what did not happen, the dog did not bark. Yair Golan on Holocaust Remembrance Day failed to remember the most political process of all, most important one, the ideology of the National Socialists that ignited riots in the streets, vandalism, and murder of Jews in the streets. On Holocaust Remembrance Day, this fool Yair Golan failed to remember the monstrous tidal wave of homicidal hatred of Jews that washed over Europe with its years of slaughter. The most important political process in Germany in that period was Judenhass, Jew hatred, big time. And he didn't mention that. And his silence is indicative of the stunted lives that his slice of Israeli society live. Bogi Yalon spoke in this vein, and so did his predecessor in the IDF, Ehud Barak, as leaders of the elite commando unit, comparable to the U.S. Navy SEALs or the British SAS. Ehud Barak echoed Bogi's way of thinking. He flings the accusation of racism, Bogi does, at the army, and Ehud Barak says this government exhibits signs of fascism. I don't think Israelis like these understand anti-Semitism, and having never confronted it in their formative years. And given the poor higher education in Israel, I don't think Barak and Golan understand what fascism is. I have a sense. I mean, spent some months living in Franco's Spain in the early 1960s, when he was still very much in control, El Supremo. There is not a smidgen of fascism in the current Israeli government, and for Barak and Yalon and their camp to insinuate that there is simply disgraceful. This is a kind of a sinat chinam, gratuitous hatred, that destroyed Jewish Jerusalem a second time. This unnecessary, nasty squabbling and name-calling that is just over the top. It's untrue, it's lashon hara, it's evil speech. And it does not help that I do not share the worldview of kibbutzniks like Barak and Yalon. The former was born and raised on one and absorbed the values, if that's the word, of this community of atheists who believe that the Zionist state should be modern and have nothing to do with the opiate of the masses, as one of their heroes, Karl Marx, preached. They believed that if they, the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, the Chalutzim, the pioneers, bring it back to life, drop their Jewishness and were nice to the Arabs, no more anti-Semitism. A new Jew was their goal because the old Jew and his religion had proven themselves to be failures. In this community, it is taboo to hate the Arabs in a general way, as these collectivists believe they know better than God, who had made the nuclear family the building blocks of a healthy society. They thought they would improve on the nuclear family, which is so natural, by taking their babies 6 weeks after birth away from the mother's breast and raising them collectively in a children's house. Thank God that institution gradually disappeared in the 1970s and 80s. They thought that they knew better than God and how to raise children, and no less, by shedding their Jewish beliefs, they thought, and practices, their Arab neighbors would be happy and become friendly neighbors. So in the IDF of Bogi and Ehud, it's forbidden to hate the Arabs. The normal reaction of a people constantly barbarically and brutally murdered by neighboring people is to hate them. And there is nothing wrong with that. For sure, a great virtue is restraint and never losing control, but I also think there's another factor at work here for such Israelis as Bogi and Ehud and the MSM journalists of the left here. Hating the Arabs damages the fantasy they harbor of someday becoming friends with them. And it also reinforces their sense of isolation and identity as Jews. Ehud Barak, remember, once said that if he were an Arab youth, he would be a terrorist too. It's the same internal constellation of feelings and needs that moved Bogi to lash out at the racists in the IDF, and by that I think he intends those who support Elor Azalia for finishing the job when he did. In our generation, leftists are also so commonly imprisoned in their own narcissism, they recoil from joining the masses in Israel who think that terrorists should be killed. I mean, what is the scenario for those who think that once that would-be murderer was brought down, the dynamics of ethics shift gears, and now we Jews must save that man's life and rush him to the hospital at our expense to save him and put him in prison and let him take... What are we, social workers with these people? In sum, this latest crumbling of a government coalition has been yet another messy stew of Israeli behavior at its worst. Thank you.
המבדיל בין קודש לחול חטותינו עם חול זרענו וחספנו יער בכחול וככוכבים בלילה המבדיל בין קודש לחול חטותינו עם חול זרענו וחספנו יער בכחול וככוכבים בלילה יום פנה כצל תומר אקרא לכם עליי גומר אמר שומר אתה בוקר וגם לילה המבדיל בין קודש לחול חטותינו עם חול זרענו וחספנו יער בכחול וככוכבים בלילה המבדיל בין קודש לחול חטותינו עם חול זרענו וחספנו יער בכחול וככוכבים בלילה צדקתך כהר תבוא על חטאי עבור תעבור
Well, the headline on Friday morning was that the U.S., that is John Kerry, will attend on June 3rd the French-organized tribunal of some 30 countries who at the end will collectively point their fingers at Israel and declare, sua culpa, you Jews are as guilty of being the obstacle and oppressor of the ancient lords of Palestine as you were when you killed Jesus, and you have to hand back the land you stole from them in 1967. I find this whole business of yet another peace conference to end the violence here just bizarre for its repetitive behavior decade in and decade out. I mentioned a webcast or two ago that my book records the attempt in January 1969 by the French to convene another peace conference, but that never got off the ground. The first meeting then between Israel and the Arabs that was allowed to be called a peace conference took place in Geneva after the Yom Kippur War in December of 1973. It was just a one-day affair of speeches by the representatives of the U.S. and the U.N., I think, but for sure the foreign ministers of Egypt and Israel and Jordan. There was an empty chair because Syria boycotted. And that was it. No real conference either in which people conferred and discussed and altered positions. A peace conference, that was no conference. Another one. And then there was the Madrid Peace Conference of 1991, brought on by the first Intifada. The most important was the Oslo Abomination Accord, signed on the White House lawn in 1993, almost a quarter century ago. And then over the next 7 years of the allegedly messianic age of peace, over 200 people in Israel would be murdered in terrorist strikes. And that was just the warm-up. In 2000, the Oslo Abomination really came apart after the Camp David talks exposed that the peace process from day one had been a fraud. So Intifada number two broke out a few months later, and that was horror in the streets for years. Almost 2,000 Jews murdered in terror atrocities and thousands more wounded. And here we are in a new decade after a decade after Intifada II subsided with another international peace conference for dozens of countries, all determined to make peace between Arabs and Jews by forcing the Jews to hand back the spoils of war they took in self-defense. And if they don't, they will be branded, if no longer Christ killers, that's out of fashion, than racist, fascist, imperialist colonists of another nation's stolen ancient homeland. And what struck yours truly about this news item on Friday about the Paris conference was that Kerry will attend, and just the flavor of ritual here, almost a religious ritual. There seems to be a need among the Goyim, the nations, to gang up on us and point their fingers of guilt at us for some monstrous crime we are believed to have committed. I mean, here the news was that Kerry, who was in Brussels last Thursday at a NATO meeting, he welcomed the French initiative, he said, and told his interviewer that his counterpart, French Foreign Minister Jean-Marc Ayrault, was on the right track. He said Kerry will work with the French. He said, I will work with the Egyptians. He had just come from Cairo earlier in the week. I will work with the Arab community, he said, in good faith, to see if we can find a way to help the parties see their way to come back to the table. And to remind, his last attempt at peace flopped 2 years ago. Most annoying here is the three promises to work with this country and work with that country when these diplomats never work. All they do is fly around and talk to each other, stay at the best hotels, eat at the best restaurants. Has Kerry nothing better to do? Likewise, the French. François Hollande and his foreign secretary, Manuel Valls. Have they nothing better to do? What do they think they will accomplish by holding a peace conference about the fate of Israel without Israel being present? Have they learned nothing since World War II about treating the Jewish people with respect? This is insulting and obnoxious and presumptuous that they know better than we how to manage our relations with our violent, savage, barbaric, anti-Semitic neighbors. The whole thing, the peace conference, there is premised on a whopping lie that the strife here is between Israelis and Palestinians when it's Muslims aggressing against Jews whose independence their religion of Islam cannot tolerate. It has nothing to do with a fantasy national identity. What burns in their savage breasts and drives them on is Islam. When interviewed in Brussels, Kerry said, quote, what we are seeking to do is to help encourage the parties to be able to see a way forward so that we can understand, so that they can understand that peace is a possibility. And I ask, when have the Arabs ever voiced the opinion that they want peace? And what they want is real estate that we Jews developed with our own blood, tears, sweat, and Jewish money. In a way, what the Arabs are doing today is exactly what the Barbary pirates did for a thousand years. They attacked Christians at sea, captured them, kept their ships and cargoes, and enslaved the passengers and crewmen, which attacks could be prevented only by paying tribute. For example, in the year 1786, in a hotel room in Mayfair in London, then as now a diplomatic neighborhood, Sheikh Abdurrahman, sent by the Pasha of Tripoli, Yusuf Karamanli, demanded $100,000 from the two American diplomats he was meeting with in that room, the ambassadors to London and Paris, respectively, the portly John Adams and red-headed and freckled Thomas Jefferson, who asked him on what grounds Tripoli was demanding this money from the U.S., and the chief said it was the jihad. Here was the Basha of Tripoli via this emissary in London with his hand out, demanding payment, or Americans would be savaged at sea, and that is, I think, more or less what Pasha Mahmoud Abbas here is doing. He has his hand out for Jewish treasure, and if he doesn't get it, the option is another round of satanic violence, the third intifada. It's an age-old challenge, the same one the highwayman makes when he stops you in your journey and says, your money or your life. And that is who Ishmael became after his expulsion from the civilized community of his father and his hundreds of followers. Rashi said Ishmael became a highwayman, an armed robber. That's who these Palestinians are. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Yeah, there's something sick about the endless attempts by goyim to convene peace conferences attended by nations who are outside our fight for survival. Who are these 30-some nations who have agreed to fly to Paris and stay at the best hotels and enjoy the best restaurants to discuss what we Jews do here? Even though there is nothing to discuss, they all agree already with one another who the bad guy is in Palestine. The song has the flavor of something surreal as well, for its woefully misconceived perception of the situation you mentioned before the music, as if the conflict is between victimized Palestinians and their victimizers, us Jews, when the hatred on display from the Arabs here is much, much older than 1967, older than 1947, older than 1917. Memory.org posted on Friday an excerpt from a recent Friday sermon, and this one May 6th, delivered in Damascus in the Umayyad Mosque. And understand what that means. This mosque is no ordinary neighborhood parish-type mosque, but the number one equivalent in the city of, say, the legendary Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris. It is the mosque commemorating the first Arab empire, the Umayyad Empire, whose caliphs built this place over the previous Byzantine Basilica of John the Baptist that stood on that ground, where local legend claims his severed head is buried somewhere. As the conquering Muslims in Jerusalem built the Dome of the Rock, where the Jewish temples had stood, so in Damascus, the Muslims, when they overran that city 4 years earlier, built this huge mosque to replace the basilica, so that the priest, Muslim priest, delivering his sermon on May 6th, was no outlier in Islam. This is not the radical extreme. And this man has his feet planted firmly in Sunni Islamic doctrine, and he preached, quote, "Treachery is one of the characteristics of the Jews. According to the protocols of the Elders of Zion, the Jews are trying to control the global news agencies in order to control global ideology. Their goal is to uproot Islam and bring ruin on its followers," close quote. Imagine Timothy Dolan, Cardinal Dolan of St. Patrick's Cathedral in the heart of Manhattan at Rockefeller Center, preaching such a sermon one Sunday. And one gets an inkling into just how far behind spiritually, culturally, civilizationally these Arab Muslims are. These are the people John Kerry and François Hollande and Emmanuel Wells want Israel to hand over the high ground to, that we captured from the Arabs in 67. This is who the enemy is. And the idea of Israel retreating and handing Judea and Samaria over to them is not of this world. I think it's another instance of Goyim relating to Jews in an unbelievably inhuman way. It's simply inhuman to expect us to do what no human beings in our situation would do. We evacuated the Gaza rectangle, and many fools thought this would bring smiles to the Arabs living there, but what we got were years of rockets fired into our homes and streets. Since the retreat 10 years ago, and counting, from Gaza, we have had 3 major military operations costing a king's ransom, in addition to the scores of dead souls, Israeli soldiers, and even then, our alleged friends, Kerry, Holland, Walls, and company, want to see us evacuate Judea and Samaria, too. We are not allowed to learn from our experience. This is inhuman. It's the latest variation in abusing the Jewish people. These goyim should be ashamed of themselves for thinking this way. But in all fairness to them, they are egged on by anti-Jew Jews in Israel and the U.S. Imagine you all saw the story today of George Soros' front organization, Plowshares, handing over millions to J Street and NPR, which is staffed by too many anti-Jew Jews, to sell this demonic "give the Iranians an atomic bomb" policy. We are under attack from a lot of directions. Thank you. Yeah, our neighbors, these Arabs, are backed in their highway robbery by Goyim in Europe and the U.S. and served by anti-Jew Jews, all of whom want Israel to hand over land to a people that produces such a recent festival in honor of Palestinian Prisoner Day, during which a little girl participant was filmed showing off her lessons when she said, quote, "Like all the children of Palestine, I do not like the occupation. I am scared of the Jews when they come into our village. They kill worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. They kill our people and imprison small children. It's my right to live in peace like all children in the world," close quote. These are the people John Kerry wants to reward with territory that is rightfully Jewish land. Kerry and Hollande and all the anti-Jew diplomats who will show up at that shindig, at this anti-Jew farce of a peace conference, should be ashamed of themselves. Okay, that's it for this first night of the week, and I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.